Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we're joined by our book reviewer, Nancy Pearl, with a list of books perfect for a week at the beach, a week at the lake, or maybe a long flight, a summer reading today. Nancy Pearl is a contributor to NPR's Morning Edition and began reviewing books for KWGS back when she was a librarian here in Tulsa in the early 90s. She's the former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book in Seattle and is the author of several books, Book Lust, More Book Lust, Book Crush, and Book Lust to Go, all books about recommended reading. More recently, she's partnered with Amazon to bring some great but lesser-known books that are out of print back into print. The Book Lust Rediscovery series has brought a dozen recommended novels back into circulation. And today's list features two titles from her new Book Crush Rediscovery series. That's for younger readers. Nancy Pearl joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Rich. It's always fun to be here.
And as I look at your latest list of books, the very first book is actually a really interesting nonfiction book, American Reckoning by Christian Appy.
Yes, Chris Appy is a professor of history at one of the UMass colleges. And he's written many, many books about Vietnam. But this book, which is his newest one, is a little bit different because what he is talking about is the myth of American exceptionalism, using Vietnam as kind of the template for how U.S. attitudes, U.S. behaviors, how we operated in Vietnam and both before and after that is really proof, if anybody needs it, that the U.S. stands on no higher moral plane than any other country. And this book, let me say, is so readable. It's a book that I found very difficult to put down because his explanations, his examples are so clear and so well presented. So he really begins in the 1950s with all of the U.S. involvement in Central America, for example, and carries it through to the present and the whole weapons of mass destruction scenario. So it's really a book that's up to the minute, but it also, and I think most importantly, is a book that gives us context for thinking about what's happening in the world today. And for me, that's one of the best things that works of history can do.
You know, I always remember when we think about Vietnam, I always remember one of Barbara Tuchman, the great historian's last book. It was called The Follies of Time or March of Follies.
Yes, I think March of Follies.
Yeah, The March of Follies. Right, and it basically looked at every great civilization, sort of the really stupid decision that sort of led them on their way to their downfall. And, of course, most controversial at that particular time was the last story was Vietnam.
Yes.
And it basically the premise was, these were decisions that this major civilization didn't have to make, but did so anyway, like all the European powers getting into World War One, or
right.
And I think we learned that lesson for a long time, but we really have forgotten that lesson.
Well, I mean, I think that what Dr. Appy is talking about in this book is how also the government lies to us and stands on this high moral ground of everything that we do. We do for a greater good as opposed to ISIS, for example, or any other country. And I think that what he's doing is dismantling very carefully and in well-documented ways that belief that our leaders still cling to.
Now, I could see if you're of a certain political persuasion, this book would be horribly infuriating. Would it be a good read? Either way, depending on where your political compass heads.
You know, I think that it's a good read all the way. But if your mind is totally made up in a way that doesn't agree with what American Reckoning lays out, that it's going to be very infuriating. But who's to say that being infuriated is not a good response to a book?
Spoken like a true librarian, Nancy.
Yes, right.
That's American Reckoning by Christian Appy. Well, the next book is one titled The Whites by an author that goes by the moniker Harry Brandt.
Yes, and if you look at the cover of The Whites, what you see is the title of the book, The Whites, and then where the author name usually is at the bottom of the cover of the book. It says Richard Price writing as Harry Brandt.
Now, what's the reason behind that?
Well, the reason behind that is that Richard Price, who is well known for writing for The Wire, the TV show, many novels that talk about society's ills in the form of a novel. They're just marvelous. They're just marvelous, you know, in-depth mysteries or crime novels or just slices of American life as seen from the front of a police car or deep in the ghetto. So he was a little tired of writing that kind of book, and he said that he wanted to write a book that was a page-turner. He didn't want to write a Richard Price book. He wanted to write another book, another kind of a novel, and so he decided to do this book, and he got a contract with a publisher, not his own publisher, not his usual publisher, and he started writing what became The Whites and discovered that he couldn't write any other way but as Richard Price, and really then regretted his decision to publish this as Harry Brandt. So, you know, his compromise was Richard Price writing as Harry Brandt. Now, the thing about The Whites is that people who look at the title, again, you look at the cover of the book, and you see the title, The Whites, and I think that for most people, what would come into their mind as the subject of the book would be something about race and, and you know, why that title? Well, in fact, this is a crime novel. This is not a book about race. And the reason it's called The Whites is that it's about a group of policemen who have in their past, each one case that they're not happy about, one case that still haunts them, either because they never found the person who did the murder, committed the crime, or, you know, the person got off because of good lawyering or whatever. But one case that haunts them, like, remember in Moby Dick, Ahab's search, you know, relentless search for the white whale.
Right.
And so these cases that each of these officers has, each of these characters has, this case is their white whale that they can't let go of. This is a page-turner. You know, what Richard Price does so well is create characters that you can actually kind of see and hear and understand. Really, when we talk about three-dimensional characters, Richard Price, even if he's writing as Harry Brandt, is so good at that. And so you care about all of these characters, or you're deeply interested in all of the characters in this crime novel, the good ones and the bad ones. And you want to know what happens to them. It's one of the best airplane books, I think, that we have available this summer.
And that's Harry Brandt's The Whites. Let's move to M.J. Carter's The Strangler Vine.
So M.J. Carter's The Strangler Vine is another mystery, and it is, I love historical mysteries, and I love India. And so when I saw The Strangler Vine is set in the 1830s, 1840s in India.
British Raj.
Yes, I just, you know, felt like I hit the jackpot. And M.J. Carter is a terrific writer. The main character in this book is a member of the Raj who has come out from England to serve in the army in England. And he, for a variety of reasons, gets assigned to find a missing writer. And he is assigned further to work with a former member of the British police force who has kind of gone native in India. And, you know, it's kind of persona non grata to all these young up-and-coming soldiers there, British soldiers there. But the two are forced to work together to look for this guy, which takes them all over India. So you get a sense of what India was like at that time. And then most interestingly, the case involves the thuggies from whom we get the word thug, who were a group of outlaws who basically robbed travelers as they were going by coach or by train. So it's all so interesting, and she does such a wonderful job.
Yeah, and of course, all the class distinctions that are part of Indian society at that point, writers have always been writing about that.
Yes, absolutely. And here you get this, you know, it goes from those parts of India that are very much under British control to those areas that are still ruled by a Raja, you know, who considers that his place, his land that he owns. So So a terrific, terrific book.
That's The Strangler Vine by M.J. Carter. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. You also hear on Morning Edition from time to time as well. But she's here with some great summer reading books. The next book is Catherine Heine's Single Carefree Mellow.
So I am neither, Rich, single nor God knows carefree, and I have never been mellow. And so, you know, looking at this title, you would think, wrong demographic. But I loved this collection of short stories. It was a delight to me to read. It's beautifully written. The stories all revolve around young women. And even though I am not of that demographic, I was just so taken in by the writing that I couldn't put this book down. Let me just say, though, that when you're reading a collection of short stories, it's different from reading a novel. And what I would say is when you have a collection of short stories by one author in your hand, what you want to do is read it very slowly. That is, read a short story, go and do something else, read another book in between, put it down for a week or a few days, whatever, and then pick it up and read another story. I think the reason you want to do that, especially perhaps in Catherine Heine's collection, which is her first collection, is that the voices can get too conflated in your mind. So the voice of the character in story one will start sounding very much like the voice of the character in story five. I, however, did not pay any attention to my own advice, but sat down and read this book from start to finish. Her writing, she is the closest that I know of to the late great short story writer Lori Colwin, and also, I think, has the same wonderful writing that Lori Moore has given us in book after book after book, especially her collection, Birds of America. So, you know, if you're a fan of Lori Colwin's short stories or novels, or Lori Moore's short stories or novels, Catherine Heine's collection, Single Carefree Mellow, is a book that I would definitely recommend picking up.
Now, how I usually read short stories is I'll read a collection, but I'm sort of discriminating on what goes to the end. If I get into a short story, a few pages, and it's just not picking up for me, I'll just move to the next one. Is that the way you read short stories, or do you tend to...
I think I'm a little harder on that than you. If I don't like a short story...
The book goes down.
Yeah, the book goes out. Yep, yeah, harsh.
But apparently Catherine Heine has written a good collection because she read every one of them, Single Carefree
right.
and Mellow.
Right.
Single Carefree Mellow by Catherine Heine. Next up is Emma Hooper's Etta and Otto and Russell and James. So, tell us a little bit about this one.
Yes, so this is the first novel with a wonderful twist to it. Otto and Russell are young boys at the beginning of the 20th century. They live on farms in Saskatchewan, adjoining farms. And Russell is kind of, almost, they're so close, they're like brothers. And into their life, when they are about in the 8th grade, 9th grade, comes a new teacher to the school that they go to who's not much older than they are, and that is Etta. And the three of them really grow up together. Etta and Otto get married. Otto goes off to fight in World War I, comes back, and their lives go on as they have been. Then when Etta and Otto and Russell are all in their, I'm thinking, late 70s, early 80s, Etta decides that it hasn't been fair that Otto has seen the ocean and she has never seen it. So she decides that what she's going to do is walk to the ocean. And when you're living in Saskatchewan, the middle of Canada, you could go either to the West Coast to see the Pacific, or you could go to the East Coast to see the Atlantic. Etta decides to go to the Atlantic. And this is the, much of this book is an account of her trudge, her trek to the Atlantic. And it's told partly in flashback, partly in the present. And James, who is the fourth character in the title, I'm not going to tell you who James is because you have to meet James as Etta does.
That's Etta and Otto and Russell and James by Emma Hooper. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. We talk about some great summer reads, and Nancy did not neglect younger readers as well. You have two books for younger readers. That's Ruth Carlson's Mr. Pudgens and Bernice Myers' Not This Bear.
So Mr. Pudgens and Not This Bear are two of the first three books that are out in a series of what we call book crush rediscoveries. Some of my favorite books, it's going to end up being a dozen of my favorite books from the 60s on to the aughts that are out of print and, you know, are ready for a new generation to appreciate. Mr. Hudgens.
We remember your adult fiction. You've
yes.
already done a dozen books there, and
yes.
now you're going on to young readers'
yes.
works.
And these are going to be books ranging from picture books through books for teens. And the first picture book that we did is Not This Bear by Bernice Myers, which is about a little boy who, because it's cold, is dressing up wearing a bear suit. He's on his way to visit his Aunt Gert, and he puts on a bear snowsuit and a bear hat. So he looks pretty much, you know, like a little bear, and he gets mistaken for a bear by a bear who happens to be ambling by, who is convinced that he is Cousin Julius coming to visit him. So the little boy goes off to the cave with the bears and then has to convince them that he is not a bear. He happens to have a fork in his pocket so he can eat with a fork and not with his hands. You know, tries to show them all these ways. And then, you know, they're convinced and they let him go or say goodbye to him and invite him to come back after the winter and after they're done sleeping for the winter. And he goes off and he no sooner takes, you know, five steps away from that bear's cave then he's mistaken for a bear by another bear who just happens to be wandering around. But in the end, everything works out fine.
Of course.
Just how it should be in a picture book. This is a book that is just fun. It doesn't teach a lesson. It's just pure fun.
And there ought to be more reading these days for little kids that it's about having fun and not teaching a lesson.
I agree. And you know, this is a book that was published in 1960. It sold over 1 million copies when it was published by Scholastic, went out of print. Bernice Myers is now not a young woman. She illustrated this and wrote it. And I'm so happy that it's back in print and available for another generation of little kids.
And, of course, that's some of the best reading is the reading you did as a little kid that you can share with the next
yes,
generation
absolutely.
Or maybe the next two generations.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And Mr. Pudgens is a chapter book, as we say in library land. I would say it's probably appropriate for second, third, fourth graders, maybe some fifth graders. It's a wonderful read aloud. It's about a kind of benign Mary Poppins. It's a man named Mr. Pudgens who comes to babysit for a family. And whenever he smokes his pipe, magic things happen. And the things that happen involve a bathtub that flies through the air. My favorite, which I have always remembered, is the episode where when you turn on the water taps, different kinds of pop of soda come out of them. So there's a root beer and a grape soda, tap. I love that. It's just, it's just a book that's fun.
That's Ruth Carlson's Mr. Pudgens and Bernice Myers' Not This Bear, two of Nancy Pearl's Book Crush rediscoveries for young readers. And now up next is William McIlvaney's Strange Loyalties. Again, this is another mystery series.
It is, and this is the third in a series about a detective named Laidlaw. You know, I suspect that many, many listeners maybe are familiar with this because it was originally written, again, in the 60s or 70s, I think, and just reissued recently as part of Europa Edition's World Noir series. William McIlvaney is really the founder of Scottish noir, or tartan noir. That's
okay.
Another way that they refer to it. But the main character in this trilogy and Strange Loyalties is, as I said, the third one. But I don't think that matters. I don't think you need to read them in order. Laidlaw is a Scottish policeman and in Glasgow, and he is one of those, you know, tough exterior, heart of gold policeman. What sets this book apart from so many other mysteries for me is the quality of the writing. You know, when I have those little tape things that you can put on, you can mark where you want to remember a particular line. And my copy of Strange Loyalties is so thick because I have so many pages marked because the writing just blew me away. Here's an example. We're all experts in concealment, hailing one another's disguises as if they were old friends. Among this jostling crowd of masks, many of which were my own, I couldn't expect to look upon the truth of what had happened to my brother. There's nobody here but us liars.
Oh, that's nice.
Great?
Yeah, that is nice. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could just read so many quotes from here, from the Laidlaw Mysteries. Strange Loyalties has to do with the death of the detective Laidlaw's brother and how he reacts to that and how he tries to find out the truth behind what happened. I was blown away by these books, and I was embarrassed that I had never read them. I mean, I I've been talking about William McIlvany, and everybody says, well, you know, we read those. Ah, yeah, of course. He's great. And I thought, where was I? How come I didn't stumble across them?
Well, we can't read everything, Nancy,
no.
Even though you try.
I do.
William McIlvany's Strange Loyalties. Up next is, it sounds like a really interesting book, Vanessa and Her Sister by Priya Parmar.
So Vanessa and Her Sister, probably one of the best novels I read this year already. I just thought this was fabulous. This is about two sisters, the Stephen sisters, Vanessa Stephen, the older sister, and Virginia Stephen, the younger sister. We know the younger sister today as Virginia Woolf, and her older sister is the painter Vanessa Bell. And this is about a particular time in their lives following World War I and the death of their brother. And it's told from Vanessa's point of view as her journals, interspersed with postcards that they get from and send, but postcards from that whole group of people who came to be known as the Bloomsbury Group. People know who Virginia Woolf is. Some people that I've talked to didn't even know she had a sister.
Yeah.
They didn't even know that she was mentally ill. They didn't know that she committed suicide. This is a book from her sister's point of view, who took care of Virginia. And Virginia was not an easy person. She was not careful about other people's feelings or appropriating other people's possessions. And I just ended up reading, I just ended up, when I finished this book, feeling so defensive about Vanessa and how come nobody knows about Vanessa Bell. And I remember saying to somebody, but Virginia is so well known. How come nobody knows who Vanessa Bell is? And this person said, you know, very dismissingly, he said, well, because Virginia was a genius and Vanessa was merely talented. And that was like a knife in my heart. I just love this book. It's fabulous.
Now, is this book a Romana Clay, or is it a historical
It's a historical novel, and she worked with a member of the Wolf Bell clan to, I don't know how much. I mean, it's certainly based on, the facts are all there, but I think the writing or what Vanessa says and, you know, her the journal is all invented, but very, very, very good.
Vanessa and Her Sister by Priya Parmar. The next book is a work of nonfiction, and it's Sam Quinones' Dreamland, which has been getting lots of publicity.
It has. So all that I want to say about Dreamland is that it is the story of two parallel health epidemics. In the United States, and one of those is the rise of opiate addiction to pain pills, and what that is doing to our society, to our cities, and the parallel rise of addiction to black tar heroin, which mostly comes from a small ranchero in Mexico, and is, as Quinones describes, black tar heroin is sold by a very, very, very business-savvy group of people who know how to do just enough not to get sent to prison. They're also smart enough to run, as Quinones points out, to run Dreamland as though it were a Pizza Hut, you know, a pizza delivery service. I thought of it more as Uber. So, you know, if you're looking for black tar heroin, these people are hanging out around methadone clinics handing out their cards. And if you're in the need of a fix, you just call that number and a dispatcher will send somebody in a car, the closest car to you, to drop it off. It's amazing, this book, in the sense that who knew? You know, who knew how deep these addictions go in the fabric of right. our cities? And the black tar heroin especially is, I think, interesting and relevant because these people are not competing with the big heroin dealers in New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco. Instead, they're targeting what we might call underserved cities, mid-sized cities, Olympia, Washington, Columbus, Ohio.
Or the heartland, yeah, right,
the heartland,
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
it also, the book does focus on both sides of this opiate addiction to legal prescription drug opiates
right.
as well as illegal drugs such as
right. And the medical profession's role in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating book. And again, it was probably written as a group of newspaper articles. So there's, you know, some internal repetition that I thought could have been edited out. But on the whole, I was just totally fascinated by it and horrified.
Sam Quinones, Dreamland. Our last book is Joachim Zander's The Swimmer, very quickly.
Yes, The Swimmer, another thriller. This is about a CIA agent who comes to the rescue of a young woman in Europe who sees something on a computer that she should not have seen. It's a page-turner. I love thrillers, and this was one that I really, really enjoyed. I hope there's no sequel to it. I mean, I just want it to be complete in and of itself.
But, you know, if it's a successful sequel, is the American way. You
know
this.
But let's stop there, Rich.
Okay. Joachim Zander's The Swimmer, and we do have to stop there.
Yes.
The list of books will be on our website, and of course, Nancy, we always appreciate your information, and it sounds like it's going to be a great summer of reading. Nancy, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Nancy Pearl is our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. For a complete list of books we discussed today on the program, you can visit our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.